my first opportunity to fail every single year. Because I make all these amazing resolutions and all this exciting stuff. And I get to the end of the year, and our family, we have all these little cards. And matter of fact, I failed miserably this year because I actually lost all my little cards from last year, which normally I don't do that. I keep them in a really safe spot. I'm sure they're still very safe somewhere. The last 3 or 4 years worth, all in a nice, neat pile wherever I put them so I wouldn't lose them. But I started out my year trying to review what I, actually not what I accomplished, but what I didn't accomplish last year. And as I was thinking about that, and, you know, we always kind of, as a family, try to take a couple of days and think about the things that we did and didn't do last year, and what are we moving to our list this year from last year, and how are we going to improve, and how are we going to be better, and God really just started dealing with me in a very different way about the same thing, and that was, and I'm going to title the message today, The God Obligation. And I think I want to just, if I can, just be kind of practical for a little bit this morning, and then maybe if you guys are comfortable with this, probably a little unusual for a Sunday morning, but just open up, if we have some time, the floor for just some conversation, and maybe some comments, and maybe some questions. And I will tell you this, I'm certainly not standing here as the authority on this subject. God dealt very powerfully with me personally as I've been preparing this message, and in fact, it ended up being nothing like what I thought I was going to talk about when I started out, and I'm glad, to be honest with you. I've got a lot of really great thoughts that someday I might use in some message somewhere for some reason, or maybe they were just from God to me so that I could straighten my life out a little bit. I do find that pretty much every time I prepare a message, God gives me a little tune-up in the process and really convicts me. So if I was going to title this sermon at all this morning, I call it The God Obligation, but our family's theme for 2020, we always try to pick some sort of a theme, you know, just because that seems like a good religious thing to do. And so this year, our theme is going to be the word intentional. And any of you guys that know me know that I'm a pretty intentional person most of the time. Spontaneous, yes, but intentional for sure. And so as I was kind of thinking about intentional, that's really when God first started dealing with me on this whole topic. And when I decided, you know what? I actually don't think this is about the new year at all. I think this is actually about life and how we look at life and, like, what is life all about? Because every year, for some reason, we feel like we need to do something about our year on January 1st. And why is that? Like, why do we care? And what symbolic function does the new year stand for? And why do we make resolutions that we know we're going to fail at? So let's talk about how to be intentional in a godly life. Assuming that you want a godly life, and if you don't, you might want to just listen out of curiosity here, but assuming that you wanted to have a godly life, I want to compare the whole concept of New Year's resolutions with our relationship with God. So we're going to have New Year's resolutions, and we're going to have God resolutions because, right, we're all creatures that need change. We all have so many things wrong with us, and I think the whole purpose of our spiritual walk is to kind of improve those things, kind of like the whole purpose of the new year for those of us that sit down and do resolutions is to make our new year better than our old year. Well, our job as Christians is to make our new selves better than our old selves and to do that with through the power of God. So let's talk a little bit about the new year. So first of all, I guess, what's the point of a New Year's resolution? Well, we're going to make it, and then we know we're not going to do it when we make it, and we know we're setting ourselves up to fail, so like, what's the purpose? Like, why do it? Well, you know, we feel like we want to be healthier, so we're going to make, you know, I'm going to do this and that this year. I'm going to go walking or running every day, and I'm going to eat less fast food and more salad, and you know, I need to be a more spiritual person, so I'm going to read my Bible, and I'm going to pray, and some altruistic service project, I'm going to go, you know, feed the homeless, or I'm going to adopt a child in another country, or one of these types of things. You know, they all seem to make us feel good, feel like we're becoming a better person. Sometimes they're kind of selfish things. You know I have on my list, we split ours up a little bit, but one of the things on one of my lists is I want to go fishing for tuna in South Carolina. Sounds like a crazy thing, but it's been a bucket list item for me. It's been on like three or four different New Year's resolution cards, and depending on how this year goes, it might be on three or four more. But I put it on the list, and if you count passes and failures as doing things and not doing things, that's one item I've failed on regularly. But you know, really what it is it's like we've, and I think this is probably very unique to America because I don't really see this other countries that I visited. We feel like everything has to have like a checklist, you know, and like we can just go check, 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 spiritual stuff, check, physical, healthy stuff, check, financial goals. Everybody has financial goals on their New Year's resolutions probably. Check. And then we get to the end of the year and we're like, I feel better. Or, man, I feel like, usually me, I feel like I'm a miserable failure. I got less than 50%. I mean, that's terrible. How could I get only 50% of the things? You know, and then those of you guys that were here, I think a couple years ago, I actually did a sermon, I think right after the new year, and talked about goals and how to make goals. And I'm really good at making goals, by the way. I make lots of goals. And I usually, in some form, fashion, or another, convince myself that I've achieved them somehow. Whether I did or not is irrelevant. I convince myself that I did, and I usually feel good about it, which encourages me to make more goals that I convince myself that I did. And it's kind of a good system, really. You know, it makes me always feel good, and I can convince everybody else because I'm like, oh, yeah, look at this checklist I got. Man, I did this, I did that, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And it is actually very motivating. You know, you can say, oh, man, I did such a great job on that this year. Well, I mean, the best part about it is when you get done, you're like, oh, yeah, done with the list. See that last check mark? Check that baby off. I mean, how many of you guys, how many of you guys, when you get done with a checklist, it's not really the feeling of satisfaction. It's like a feeling of freedom. Because now you're like, hey, the list is done. Now I can have some me time, right? I can go ride my bike. That's what I like to do. I can go fishing. I can go whatever it is that's your thing. You know, I know some of you guys are into bocce ball. Some of you guys are like pickleball. Somebody plays cards. I know you guys have all different. I'm done with my list. Next stop, me time. Well, the problem is New Year's, we make all these resolutions, and then we end up with what I like to call the New Year's resolution problem. Anybody ever like gotten a helium balloon for one of your children? Maybe your kids have gotten this, and they're one of the really big helium balloons. You know what I'm talking about? Like the huge ones. And you bring it home, and then after a few days, like it gets smaller and smaller. And at some point, it starts to age. And when I say age, those of you that are my age and older will understand what I'm talking about. It starts getting wrinkly. And then it kind of starts getting lower and lower and lower. That's actually the perfect parable of the New Year's resolution problem. See, our New Year's resolutions never fail catastrophically right in the beginning of the year. Usually they don't. I mean, maybe you have some great stories, which I'd love to hear, actually. It'd make me feel better about how bad I do if your story was worse than mine. But it's really just kind of this slow, deflating, sinking process. And by the time you get to December 31st, you're looking, if you can find them, and you haven't catastrophically failed, you can find your little cards, you're like, ooh, well, I can get one more item on this list done before next year, and then I'll have a 51% pass rate instead of a 50% pass rate. But I'm still a failure at 51%. I only got half of what I plan to do done. Well, you know, with our results typically being a shadow of our previous year's glorious plans, then our standards and our expectations for ourselves typically do the same thing that balloon does. You know, when you're maybe in your teens and 20s and you think you can conquer the world and you know everything, your expectations are here. You're going to be a millionaire by 30. You're going to be retired and a philanthropist by 40. And by the time you're 40, you're like, am I just going to be able to make it until my children are all out of the house? And then what do I do for money? Because I think I'm going to be so old at that point, I'm not going to even be able to work. And I'm broke. And I've talked about this before, but you know, it actually doesn't matter how much money you make, you're still always broke And I don't know if it's only if you're a parent, because I've been a parent since I was in my 20s. So maybe you guys, if you're not parents, you could tell me. But pretty much, the more you make, the more you spend. And it's the same thing. You're like looking for some attainment. You're trying to find some fulfillment. And it just doesn't work. It just doesn't work. So, you know, I always am like, okay, I failed this year to achieve all my New Year's resolutions. Let's sit down and do a postmortem analysis and determine why everything failed. And then next year, we're going to be proactive and we're going to create better goals and we're going to have better follow through. And I'm going to organize things and I'm going to put it on the calendar. You know, I'm just, not that I even look at my calendar, but it feels, makes me feel good to put it on the calendar anyway. And so I'm like, okay, well, clearly I did not plan my objectives properly. That's a problem. I didn't plan it out correctly. That's the problem. Or really, it wasn't actually a goal. It's just like, well, you know, it'd be nice to go tuna fishing in South Carolina. I actually don't have any clue where you go. I don't know how much it costs. I don't know who you'd call. I don't even know what kind of fishing pole you actually need or what kind of bait you use, and I don't know anybody that does it. But I saw it on the front of a magazine one time, and it looked really cool. And so I'm like, I'm doing that. Which is kind of be nice. Maybe that wasn't a great thing to put on my list of goals to achieve in the next 12 months if I had no clue what was involved in it. What about maybe I didn't really seek after God on something, and I'm like, oh yeah, I'm going to do this. And then I start getting into it and go, well, this is probably not in line with what God's priorities for my family are. And, you know, come to think of it, I didn't really think about this. I didn't pray about it. I didn't really talk to my wife about it. I think I just decided I was going to do it. And I found out, you know what? That really probably wasn't a great goal to have. Failed on that one. Well, now the 50%'s looking better because I'm actually, like, checking off goals that I shouldn't have made to start with. So my list actually looks like I did better even though I didn't. Maybe there's no meaningful significance to what I'm doing. Doesn't mean anything to me. It's just something that I read or heard somewhere. I listened to a podcast. I heard it on the radio. Like, oh yeah, I'm doing that this year. That was the end of my conviction. It was like momentary conviction. That's what our country's all about, by the way. Everything is momentary in this country. Like, we throw away so much stuff. The population of our country is 100% disposable, life-oriented. Oh, those shoes, they're dirty, and the shoelaces are messed up. And there's, you know, scuffs on them. Well, just give them to Goodwill and get a new pair. Well, the good news is they're probably really nice shoes, and then I can go to Goodwill and buy your $100 shoes for $3 and take a little scrubby and clean off the black marks, and I got a nice pair of shoes for $3, and you took a $97 depreciation on your investment, and I'm actually doing great. The bad news for you is you just wasted $97 because those shoes, I guarantee you, when I buy them, I'm going to wear them for a year at least before I wear those babies out. Maybe two or three. Just depends. You guys understand what I'm saying? You know, I guess the big thing when I started putting all this together was, I always try to do this. I'm not looking at you guys. I'm looking at me. And I got done with this list, and I'm like, ouch. This hurts. It's convicting. Like, how is it possible? I call myself a Christian. I stand up on a stage. Sometimes maybe I should not be up on the stage. And talk to people like I actually have some clue what I'm talking about. And in some way can speak some of God's thoughts, not my thoughts, because my thoughts are worthless. I'm just like you. I'm just another guy. Somehow speak some of God's thoughts in a way that you can internalize those and apply them to your life and become a better individual and a better Christian and a better follower of Christ and more inspired. Somehow or another, I think I can do that. But then I look at all this stuff and I go, wow, I am terribly, terribly underqualified. Terribly underqualified to do this job. And then I realize, oh yeah, that's right. I don't have to. You know, probably a good question is like, why would we obligate ourselves to failure? Like, why? Like, we do it intentionally, on purpose, over and over and over and over. And I think it's because deep inside we realize spiritually and physically we're not who we want to be. We're not who we should be. And so we start developing this sense of obligation to something that we don't understand, mainly because we never thought about it. And that's where the term God obligation comes in. We start to become religious. And I'm not even just talking about religious topics. We just start becoming religious about life. Well, you know, if you don't work out at least 3 times a week, if you don't eat healthier, I mean, wait until you're in your 60s and 70s. You're going to regret it. Well, you know, of course, then there's grandma off the Clampets that's, you know, spitting tobacco at 95 years old, and she's been drinking whiskey 3 times a week her entire life, and she's just fine. I could justify my health that way. But I know I shouldn't. I do feel some obligation to do something. So I'm going to do something. A lot of times it's a sense of inadequacy. Like, I don't know, I don't know if you guys ever struggle with this. I'm a public speaker. I speak to people all the time. And I mean, different size crowds. Could be 20 people, which is actually the most difficult group to speak to, or 1,000 people or more for that matter. That's actually a lot easier because, like, you don't know anybody and you're in another state and you're in a big auditorium and you're just like, whatever. Like, I don't know you. You don't know me. I'll probably never see you again. Hopefully I say everything right. And if I don't, I'm going to apologize. I'll even send you an email that says, hey, sorry, I guess I messed up on that one. But somehow deep inside, we want to feel better about ourselves. And so we feel like, well, if I make some sort of a checklist and I do those things, whatever those things happen to be, I'm a good person. I'm a better person than I was. Matter of fact, I might feel like I'm better than you because you worked out 2 times a week and I worked out 4 times a week. So, ha. And, you know, you helped one person this year with charity and I helped 3 people this year with charity. That's a 66% increase over yours. I can put some numbers to that, and I check off some lists, man. I'll give myself a Pen of Rose on Your Nose award. I might even sew up my own little, or get printed up my own little t-shirt that says what a great person I am that I give to this charity or that charity. By the way, that's why everybody has 7,000 $5 t-shirts in your drawer from all the events that you attended. Because we're all searching so hard for some way to feel better. They're like, well, listen, if you'll donate just $19.99 to our charitable organization, we'll send you this t-shirt for free. Well, what you should have done is donated the $20. They should have saved the $5 plus shipping and handling on the shirt. And you should have put $20 towards doing something worthwhile instead of $5 of that $20 being spent to make you feel like you did something. Because the reality of the matter is the reason why you need that t-shirt is because you know you didn't do what you should have done. $20, I mean, come on. Seriously? Okay, listen, there were many times in my life where $20 was a lot of money. But there were many times in my life where I would say $20 was a lot of money, but then I would run right over to McDonald's, usually Taco Bell, not McDonald's, I don't like McDonald's as much, but sometimes McDonald's, and I'd drop $20 on food that I could have had for $3 at the house and saved $17 because I was lazy. You know, maybe we make resolutions because it's the thing to do, right? January 1st, it's on TV. If you watch TV, it's all over TV. Social media, it's all over social media. Matter of fact, I noticed I do all the, certain part of our business has social media, and I do all the postings for that certain part of the business. And I noticed they actually have things now that are your New Year's resolution, like wizards. Like it's actually a wizard. And it actually tells you what you should be resolving to do for 2020. Like you answer some questions, it generates a list, you check them off, and it actually tells you, hey, these are your resolutions for 2020 based on how you answered these questions. You know, like, do you eat healthy? What I should have done is I should have taken it and said, like, no, I don't eat healthy. I should have said no to everything, you know what I mean? And then see what it tells me. Hey, listen, you know what? You're such a terrible person. Really, all you need to do is just log in tomorrow and create another resolution plan, and you've improved over last year. I mean, think about it. If I didn't have any New Year's resolutions last year and I made some this year, I mean, that's an improvement, isn't it? That should make me feel better. That's the society we live in. You know, the God obligation, I like to call it Resolution 2.0. And you guys are going to crack up because pretty much can just about guarantee every person in here has done this. All right, you ready for this? Here we go. Resolution 2.0. Read three chapters a day. Raise your hand. Come on. Okay. Heard of it or done it, I don't care. Pray 3 minutes a day or 1 minute a day. I've heard both. Okay. Do three kind things to someone in a day. And last but not least, give in three different ways each and every day. I mean, come on. That's pretty good, you know? And it could be something besides three, because everything has to be in multiples of 1, 3, or 7, because those are all God's numbers. And we're all God's people. So, you know, you could do 1 minute of prayer, one chapter instead of three chapters. Or if, you know, super pious and, you know, you're going to tell everybody about it anyway, oh, yeah, I did my 7 chapters today. I did 7 chapters and I prayed for 7 minutes because I'm so holy and religious. I don't want to come across that these are bad habits, because they're not, right? Do we all need to make commitments to certain things? I mean, I know I do. Listen, I do the 3 chapters a day thing every single year. I think I've done it correctly like one time in my entire life. Once. Can I be honest with you guys? I got a D in New Testament survey. You know why? Straight A's on every assignment, straight A's on every single test. You know why I got a D? 50% of my grade was reading the entire New Testament in one semester, and I couldn't lie about it, and I got a D. I had to retake the class. Anybody else? I mean, am I just standing up here the only person that's ever failed at a Bible reading plan? Okay, I'm just saying. It happens. It's just life. We need to have disciplines in our spiritual life, but they can't just be these resolution 2.0s. They can't just be these things that we say and we do because somehow or another we want to check it off as some kind of a list. Let me just give you this. If it is a resolution 2.0, you will fail. And if you don't fail this year or this week or this month, you will fail next year or next week or next month. Because it's not something that came from inside of you. It's something that was out here somewhere. I had to make a resolution. But, you know, here's the thing about all those resolutions. I didn't realize this until I really, really started kind of thinking about this. We get all our stuff done. We check all our boxes off. And then we're relieved. We're happy. We're joyous. We're free. You know what that actually means? It means you actually resent having to do those things on your list. There's some bondage. There's some level of compulsion. There's something in you that's like, I don't want to do this, but I have to. Let me just get this out of the way. You know, quite honestly, I think as a human, naturally, we hate doing spiritual stuff. I mean, it's just work. We hate serving other people. Like, who cares? Why? Whatever. Like, they could do it themselves. Why should I do it for them? Just your nature, right? If it doesn't benefit me, my goals, my life, my financial freedom, my Christian improvement, my children, who cares? Why? I don't care. Like, let's move on. Let's check the list off. Listen, I love 3 chapters, 3 minutes, and 3 things. And because you know what? I could probably have that done by like 7:55 a.m., which leaves me the entire rest of the day to do whatever I want to do guilt-free because I went check, 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 check. And, you know, once a week I can stand up at some church somewhere and preach a sermon and go, whoo, boy, I'm going to one-up you, son. I preached however many times this year. Well, I can imagine if I was a pastor, you know, 52 sermons a year, I bet you I'd be pretty full of myself. Because all I'm trying to do is just check it off. It's really not coming from inside, it's coming from outside. Matter of fact, the reason, do you know why we have to write down New Year's resolutions? Does anybody know why? So we don't forget what they are. I lost my lists. Do you know, I could remember like 3 things on all of the things. Now, I'm sure I probably did some of them by accident, not because I was like purposefully trying to do them. I'm just like, hey, I'm going to do this year. And God smiled down upon me and said, oh, you pitiful person, I'm just going to go ahead and let you get this done so that at the end of the year, you're not despondent. You actually feel good that you did something this year, right? Because I don't want you to be under 50%, Brian. You might take that personally. But it didn't come from inside of me, so I forgot. It's not a part of who I am, so I forgot. You know what we treat God like? God stuff, right? The God obligation. We treat it like kids treat chores. That's what we treat it like. I mean, think about it. Washing the dishes. Well, it's for everybody's benefit that the dishes get washed because we would usually like to eat another meal. But it's not such interesting stuff, so usually the dishes sit dirty until somebody fusses. Well, everybody made dishes, so everybody should help wash the dishes. Fair. I have a problem with that. I have a problem with the fact that you think that, but I don't have a problem with the concept. You know, I have to do this all the time. This is such hard work. But when you want to repaint your bedroom, you got plenty of time for that. When you want to go with some friends and do some project or play some really difficult sport, you have plenty of time for that, plenty of energy and plenty of dedication, determination. No problem. But dishes, it takes like 6 or 7 minutes after a meal. I mean, it's like the bane of every mother's existence. Like, are you kidding? We have a dishwasher. You don't have to go to the river, get the water, carry it in buckets back to the house, pour it in a pot, light a fire, heat the water up, and then we're talking, you open a little door to this little magic box where you stick stuff in, and then you throw this little magic pillow full of something inside of there, and you say, I want a hot shower. Delay 2 hours, please. Close the door. Go to bed. You wake up in the morning. Voila. Clean dishes. And we can't even get the dishes done. I mean, come on. And even if we do, oh, well, that cut into my day. I could have been out of here 30 minutes ago if I didn't have to do them dishes. Somebody else needs to do this instead of me. Oh, yeah, so somebody else can cut into their day for 30 minutes because that is so gratuitous of you to think of that other person. Are you guys resonating with me? I mean, it's who I am as an individual. I'm talking about me. The reason why this is like so compelling is because I'm actually talking about myself. So I know all about me. I know me better than you do. Trust me. I mean, guys, it's who we are. Let me tell you about a couple Bible peeps that are kind of like us. There's this dude, his name was Jonah. Jonah was a prophet. Ooh. Anybody watch VeggieTales? I got a bunch of smiles out of that one. Every time we talk about Jonah, somebody says Jonah, and I go, was a prophet. Ooh. And everybody like shakes their head, Dad. And I'm like, hey, you watched it as many times as I did. Trust me. Now the word of the Lord came to Jonah, the son of Amittai, saying, arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and call out against it, for their evil has come up before me. But Jonah rose to flee to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. Hello. God actually told him to do something. By the way, this is God, as in the guy that you can't see. He's everywhere. And he rose up to flee from God, the one that created the heavens and the earth, the ones that created man. He rose up to flee. Dude, he created the earth. How are you fleeing? He created the universe. Like, you'd have to, I'm not even sure if there is an outside of the universe, but, you know, you can't flee. And he rose up, and this is really funny, actually. He rose up. Do you know how he tried to flee from God? He went to Joppa and got on a boat. Now, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but of all the places that I don't feel 100% safe, it's in the air or in the water. Now, I love flying, and I love being in the water, but I recognize there's an inherent danger to not being on the dirt. This dude goes and gets on a rickety wood boat that doesn't even have a motor or a bilge pump. He goes out in the middle of an ocean. They don't have radar or the weatherman, and decides he's going to run from God on a boat. Hello. Does that make sense to any of you guys? Because it doesn't make any sense to me. I'm just going to tell you, for a prophet of God, the dude was not real smart. Just throwing that out there. And so he paid the fare. He went in down into it to go with them to Tarshish, away from the presence of the Lord. Then Jonah prayed to the Lord his God from the belly of the fish. I'm going to fast forward. Do you know what happened between those two verses? Let me give you the short run because I don't want to spend all day reading this to you. But storm comes. Prophet goes, uh-oh, I guess running on a boat was a bad idea. Now everybody's going to die. People on a boat are like, whose fault is it? I don't know how they figured this out. Somehow they cast lots. Whatever exactly that means, I don't know. But I think it's like you got the short straw and it's you kind of a thing. And it comes to Jonah and he says, okay, I'm busted. You're right. I'm running from God. I'm sure they're all on the boat like, you're running from God? Like, how could you even think, on a boat? What, you didn't think this out, did you? Okay, well, what do we do? Throw me in the water. Throw you in the water? You're also not thinking this one out. Do you realize there's a storm out there and you're going to die? Well, yeah, I do realize that, but you're all going to die if you don't throw me out. They're like, oh, good point. We'll throw you out. Out the door. Okay, so then Jonah prayed to the Lord from the belly of the fish. Well, then the big fish comes. We don't know what kind of fish. You know, whale, not whale. Who cares? He got swallowed by something larger than him that had a big mouth. I called out to the Lord out of my distress, and he answered me. Out of the belly of Sheol I cried, and you heard my voice. For you cast me into the deep in the heart of the seas, and flooded, and the flood surrounded me. All your waves and your billows passed over me. And then I said, I'm driven away from your sight, yet shall I look upon your holy temple. Picture me. Right? You screw up. You realize you screwed up. Who's the first person you go to when you realize you really made a big mistake? Oh, God, I really, really, really messed up. Yeah. Matter of fact, you could be somebody that never, ever, 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 ever prays, ever, have a terrible relationship with God, and you're up north and you hit a patch of ice in a car and it starts spinning into oncoming traffic. You will immediately seek out God and pray that he will protect and preserve you. That's a fact. I'm not making it up. I'm just, you know. Matter of fact, I don't want to get distracted, but it's just what happens. We know the rest of the story, but I want to point out a couple of things that he did right. He did go eventually. Now, he did have to get swallowed by the fish and vomited up on the dry land, and somewhere in the process, it said that he actually went to the bottom of the ocean, got seaweed wrapped around his head. So I don't know if the fish ate him at the top like all the movies show, or the fish ate him at the bottom. You know, the fish was just going all like, what is that? Looks good to me. But he had seaweed wrapped around his head, whole nine yards. The result was he did what God wanted him to do. Kind of a painful way to get there. Did what God wanted him to do. The big problem with this whole picture was he was very resentful that he had to do what God wanted him to do at the end. Matter of fact, if you read the rest of the story, he goes up, he's pouting underneath of like a little shade hut that's made with some sort of vines. God sends a worm to eat the vines. It burns the vines up. And then not only is he pouting, he's like, God, why did you eat the vine? Now I'm going to die. It's like, you know, when we're doing something, oh, I'm never going to get done. Well, of course you're going to get done. There's no such thing as never. That's us. I'm out about you guys. That's me. I look at some things sometimes and I'm like, oh, this is going to literally take forever. Well, clearly it is not literally going to take forever. It's not really, in the grand scheme of things, my short life of 44 years, it's not going to take a long time if I do a percentage ratio of how long whatever that thing is that I have to do versus the number of hours I've lived on this earth. I have a bad attitude. I resent that I have to do it, even though I know I should do it. There's another guy. Name was Naaman. Anybody know that guy? So he has leprosy. He's actually like this really highly decorated, I think he was a general or something of that nature. He's a commander and a king of the army of Syria. And he has leprosy. And he finds out through his wife's servant that there's a prophet that he can go to, one of God's prophets, and he can get healed of his leprosy. Sounds like a pretty good deal to him. So being a very motivated individual, because back in those days, leprosy, that kind of means like you basically are a total social outcast. Like you can't be around anybody. You can't go into presence of anybody. You got to walk on the other side of the road. It's really embarrassing stuff. And so he goes to the land of Israel. And let's see if I can find it here. But when Elijah, the man of God, heard the king of Israel had torn his clothes, he sent to the king saying, "Why have you torn your clothes?" That's because the commander of Syria's army went to the king first and said, "Hey, heal me of my leprosy." Of course, the king couldn't do it. And he says, "Let him come now to me, that he may know that there is a prophet in Israel." So Naaman came with his horses and chariots and stood at the door of Elijah's house. Now, this was a prophet right here. And Elijah sent a messenger to him. All right, imagine this. Elijah's in his lazy boy, sitting back watching the game. The commander of one of the largest military powers in the world comes to the door of his house, and he's like, "Yeah, tell him to go wash in that dirty river over there. He's got to dip 7 times. He'll be good to go." Naaman was upset. Would you be upset? He felt like he deserved, as a matter of fact, it even says here, "But Naaman was angry and went away saying, 'Behold, I thought he would surely come out to me and call by the name of his God and wave his hands over me,'" right, "'and cure the leper. Are not Abana and Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? Could I not wash in them and be clean?' So he turned and went away in a great rage." Man, that was a real, real eye-opener for me. How many times has God given you a solution to your problem and you've been dismissive and upset? I know I have. And fortunately for this guy, apparently somebody that he liked, because it says, "But his servants came near to him and said, 'My father, it is a great word the prophet has spoken to you. Will you not do it?'" Like, dude, how stupid can you be? He just told you to go dip in a river 7 times. You can get rid of the leprosy. Like, are you not going to go do this? "Has he actually said to you, 'Wash and be clean?' So he went down and dipped himself 7 times in the Jordan according to the word of the man of God, and his flesh was restored like the flesh of a little child, and he was clean." Now, it doesn't tell us any real details afterwards, other than he went back and tried to pay the prophet and all these other kind of things, and then you hear the rest of the story. But my point is this. Many, many, many times, I feel, in my life, I actually didn't take that other step, that like, okay, I'll do it. But at least Naaman did. At least Naaman actually did what God told him to do, and the result was pretty stupendous, if I do say so myself. I mean, it was a pretty good result. He's leprosy-free. And not just leprosy-free, it's like the skin of a little child. I mean, depending on what age he was in his life, that was probably a pretty big blessing. So, you know, to sum it up, Naaman was angry. He threw a 2-year-old temper tantrum. He finally obeyed God, and he received the reward that he did not deserve. By the way, he didn't deserve that. Matter of fact, not only did he not deserve it, do you know why God did that? God did that so that Naaman would know that there was a prophet in Israel and that he was the prophet of God, because nobody else could cure Naaman's leprosy. That's why God did it. God had a plan, apparently, that was a little bigger than the king of Israel's plan or Naaman's plan. I find myself kind of like Naaman when I approach God. I guess I treat God kind of like a genie or a magician sometimes. I pray a prayer. Whatever the prayer happens to be, it might be a very, very earnest prayer. And in my brain, I know what the answer is already, somehow. Like I know, oh God, yeah, this is definitely, oh Lord God, could you please solve this problem in this way, at this time, in this place, with this person? And it doesn't happen. That's kind of like one of my kids coming to me saying, "Dad, you love me, and you're going to give me $20 so that I can go to a movie and get popcorn and ice cream, and if you don't, you don't love me." And I'm like, huh? What does this have to do with that? How about, Dad, I need $20 to go to the movies. Well, you don't need $20, but are you saying you want $20? Well, yes, I would like $20 to go to the movies. Okay, well, you know what? I'm going to bless you with $20 because I love you and you've been working hard and you're a great kid and here's $20. Or I might say, hey, I'm not giving you $20. Period. What they don't know is I've got a gift card in my back pocket for $50 to the movie theater. And now they're going to get all upset and start defending themselves and, well, but Dad, you don't know how hard I worked and this has been a good week and I did all my chores and my school's done and I cleaned my room and all that. Like, hey, man, listen, I was going to give you a $50 gift card, but you don't seem very grateful to me. Maybe I should just give you $20. Maybe I should give you 10 and make you pay the other half, because right now I'm not feeling very benevolent. Is that how we treat God? Like, we go into a prayer already knowing how God's supposed to answer the prayer. Instead of seeking God's face, we're telling God what his face should be. I love your face. It should look just like this. I'm pretty sure there's no model for that in the Bible. I'm pretty sure there's no model for that in real life. By the way, I don't know if you guys realize this. Everything in real life actually parallels Scripture and vice versa. Scripture parallels real life. Like, they're connected. You're not going to go talk to your spouse and say, you love me, so you will be like this, you will be like that, you will be here at this time, you will provide me with this much money, you will put me in this kind of a house, and I can drive this kind of a car, and our children will look like this, and our in-laws will act like this, and you're going to have this kind of, okay, rewind. That relationship was over like three demands in, and you didn't realize it. You know, just the way it is. You're upset about the way your parents are? Let me give you a little clue, speaking personally. By the time you're a parent, you will discover that your parents are you, and you are your parents, whether you like it or not. So my suggestion is, don't be upset. What I would do is I'd start figuring out what you like about your parents, and I'd really focus on those things. Lord willing, you will fill your life up with so much of those things that there won't be as much room for the stuff you don't like about your parents in your life as you get older and become a spouse and a parent. That's how connected the Bible and life and Christianity are. We question God. Like, we pray a prayer. We tell him what his face should be. Hey, God, this is the way it's supposed to work. And I need it, by the way, by noon tomorrow. Yeah, God, I'm $500 short paying my bills. Because I was an idiot and I go to McDonald's every day and drink Starbucks and I have a car payment I can't afford and I live in a house that's too big and I wear designer clothes I can't afford and fancy shoes I can't afford and drive all over the place that I really can't afford to do, but I need $500 tomorrow or I'm going to lose my house. Oh God, I need you to answer this prayer. And then he doesn't answer it. And we go, oh God, why have you forsaken me? We've got to get all biblical, right? We're going to pull some scripture out there, get some cliche phrases. Why don't you love me, God? What did I ever do? I try to be a good man. I tithe 10% on most Sundays, except for the ones that I go to breakfast before church, or if I forget cash. Huh. Could be a problem. You know, there's a guy in the Bible, one of my other peeps, Job. Love Job. Now, unlike me, Job was upright and blameless in all his ways, not a man's sight, in God's sight. He was so blameless, God held him up in front of the devil and said, have you considered my servant Job, who is blameless? Hello. I mean, that must have been an awesome dude. Awesome dude. And Job, he kind of questions God because he has a little problem. Loses a little money, a few kids, a house, a couple other things, some camels. And he like gets upset. I don't know what his deal was, you know. And God says in chapter 38, starting at verse 4, I don't think you actually knew. This is kind of paraphrased a little bit. I don't think you actually know who you're talking to. Let me just clear something up with you. Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? Tell me if you understand. Who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Or who stretched that line upon it? Maybe he was talking about the equator, not sure. On what were its bases sunk, or who laid its cornerstone? When the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy? Or who shut the sea with doors when it burst out from the womb? When I made clouds its garment and thick darkness its swaddling band? If you know a little bit about science, you know this entire geographic landmass that all of us are on is floating on water. That's why we don't burn up from the heat of the Earth's core. The entire Earth crust is floating on water layers to keep it cool. God let just enough out to fill up all the oceans and then said, done. Shut the door on that one. Perfect. No more, no less. Perfect. Who prescribed the limits for it and set its bars and doors and said, thus far shall you come and no further, and here shall your proud waves be stayed. That was the Creator. That's who it was. And Job, just like me, had the audacity to question God. Like, seriously? Oops. I know all the kids are looking at it, so. There we go. Is that better? What is the audacity to question God? It's kind of laughable. Here's why I think this all comes back around, and I want to try to bring this to a close. Just like God was questioning Job, like, how could you possibly even understand anything I did? And there's no way that Job could, or you or me or anybody that's ever lived on this earth ever. He's the Creator. In Isaiah 55, 8 and 9, God says, for my thoughts aren't your thoughts, and my ways aren't your ways. As the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts higher than your thoughts. Like, God's incomprehensible. Like, we can actually ask God a question and wait for the answer. We don't have to give him a clue. We don't have to actually tell him, hey, here's a hint what the answer should be, just in case you don't know, because he does. So, kind of circling back around to this whole resolution 2.0 thing, like, where does this leave us? Like, what are we doing? What do we do when we leave here? Because now, like, I don't even want to make any New Year's resolutions, and if I did, I'm just going to throw them all away. And I sure don't want to, like, obligate myself to God, because I already know I'm a failure, and I don't have any clue what I'm doing anyway. Like, we've already clearly established that, I'm pretty sure. I'll say this. Naaman was a Gentile. Wasn't even like a believer. Jonah was a prophet. Naaman almost got it right. I will even go so far as to say that apparently God overlooked Naaman's initial problem with resentment and anger because God healed Naaman when he obeyed him. Naaman got the answer the way God wanted him to get it, not the way Naaman wanted to get it. I think our biggest problem is we don't treat our resolutions or our life like somebody's life depends on it. And it does. My life depends on it. My family's life depends on it. My children's life depends on it. And in a spiritual sense, spiritually, my life depends on it. My wife's life depends on it, my children's life, my friends, my family, their life depends on me making resolutions like somebody's life actually depends on it. You see, there's very, very little difference between spiritual life and physical life. There's very little difference between a New Year's resolution and a God resolution, or there should be. But we don't treat them that way. Again, New Year's resolution, checklist. God obligations, checklist. Just a resolution 2.0 is all it is. Spiritual resolutions fail. I'm going to pray for an hour every day. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. We don't treat them like they're important, number one. But the biggest thing is we don't treat it like you might never get another chance to get it right. Like, there's a clock ticking, and it's not counting up, it's counting down. Like, we're all like, oh, yeah, I'm 35, 36, 37, 38. Well, somewhere, God's got a calendar. It's appointed unto every man and woman once to die. It's an appointment you have. So God's calendar is actually starting somewhere and counting down. And for you, if you're 15, 16, 17 years old, it might be you're down to 3, 2, 1, out of here. It could be tomorrow. For some of us, listen, 44 years, I'm pretty happy. Got to be honest with you. Can't believe I made it this long. Can't believe my mom didn't kill me. And after that, I don't know how I made it after that because I did some really stupid stuff in my life. But somehow God had mercy on me and I made it this long. Now, I don't know how many I have left. And because we don't spend a lot of time planning, being intentional about things of God or the things of what we're doing, we're not real successful. You know, imagine if I said, you know, Bob, fictional Bob, having a lot of headaches, thinking he needs brain surgery. What we should do is we should cut off the top of his head and just see what's in there, first of all. And then, I don't know, we should do something while we're in there. And then let's just go ahead and throw the top of his head back on and see what happens. I think we'd all agree, probably not a good way to resolve Bob's problem. Well, it probably will permanently resolve Bob's problem. But that's not a good plan, right? And kind of being lighthearted. But I think we need to remember a few things. Number one, life is full of a lot of simple truths. Simple, simple truths. It's not big, heady, irrevocable theological premises. Say that 5 times fast. Holy moly. I don't even know where that came from. It's just simple facts, simple truths. Number one, our days are numbered. It's a simple truth. Today could be your last day. You know, it used to be real, real popular. You know, you guys that went to revivals back in the day, the revival evangelist would be standing up there and say, you never know. If you walk out that door and get hit by a Mack truck on your way out to the car. And I'm thinking to myself, man, if there's a Mack truck going through the parking lot of our church, it was your time to go. That's all I'm going to say. But you never know. Could happen. Genesis 6:3 says, my spirit shall not abide in a man forever, for he is flesh. And it even numbers our days, maxed out 120. Anybody over 120, God loves you. There are a couple people that have lived longer than that. Psalms 90, verse 10, the years of our life are 70, or even by reason of strength, 80, yet their span is but toil and trouble. They are soon gone and we fly away. Hebrews 9:27 says, and just as it is appointed for a man to die once, and after that comes judgment. I want to put a little perspective on the rest of your life right now. And I want to put a little urgency on the rest of your life right now. I'm going to read a little story and share this periodically. Some of you may have heard it. Some of you might not have. But I love this story. And it really changed my life the first time I heard it. And it's made me a much more intentional person about everything that I do in my life, every single thing. Early one Saturday morning a couple weeks ago, I was walking towards my garage with a hot cup of coffee in one hand and a newspaper tucked under the other arm. I climbed the stairs into the loft of my garage where I've got a cozy little office set up and against one wall, ham radio equipment. I took a sip of my coffee as the radio was warming up. Yeah, this was an old one. Has the tubes inside that need to heat up before it gets going. As it was warming up, it started humming, so I plugged in my speaker instead of my headphones and began to turn the dial on the front to see if I could get a fix on a strong station. I picked up the usual static and a few weak signals, but all of a sudden, this strong-sounding voice and signal comes up. This guy had a great voice, the kind you'd expect to be on a working in the radio industry. You could tell the guy was an older guy. So he's talking to someone and sharing his story of 1,000 marbles. It caught my attention, so I sat back, sipped on my coffee, and listened. He said, Tom, sure sounds like you're a busy guy. You're working 60 to 70 hours a week just to support your family. It's really too bad that young people have to work that many hours just to get by. I'm also very sorry to hear that you missed your daughter's recital, but let me share a story that happened years ago and helped me set some new priorities in my life. And so this older man began to explain his theory of 1,000 marbles. You see, Tom, one day many years ago, I sat down and did a little math. The average person lives to be 75 or so, give or take a few years. So I multiplied 75 by 52, and 52 is the number of Saturdays you get in 1 year. The total came to 3,900 Saturdays in an average lifetime, give or take. Now hang in there with me, Tom, I'm getting to the point. I didn't really get my head around this idea until I was about 55 years old, and by that time, Tom, I had lived more than 2,800 Saturdays. Now, Tom, I'm guessing you're not even close to 55, so you have a bunch more Saturdays to look forward to. I figured out that if I lived to be 75, that meant I had 20 years of Saturdays left to go, or about 1,000 more to enjoy. This opened my eyes. I wanted to do something that would force me to focus and pay attention. That afternoon, I went to a toy store in my area, bought all the marbles they had. I actually had to visit 3 toy stores until I had enough. I brought all the marbles home and put them down in my basement where I had a room and I could just sit down and relax, a place alone where I wanted some quiet time. I had a few large glass jars like the ones you get when you buy pickles. And I took those jars and sat down and began counting marbles and putting them into the jars. About 20 minutes later, I had counted out 1,000 marbles. And I put the lid on the jar and sat back and just stared at the thing and said, "That's all the Saturdays I have left." Every Saturday since then, I've taken out one marble and thrown it away. It became very apparent that time was running out, and it was very important for me to prioritize my time. No one has forever, Tom. Now, before and go take my lovely wife out for dinner, I just wanted to add that this morning, I took the last marble out of that jar. If I get to see next Saturday, well, then I'll have been blessed with a little extra time. We could all use a little more time, son. Just think about it. This is 75-year-old Jack Parker signing off, wishing you all a good morning. Puts a little perspective on life, doesn't it? We're not guaranteed 75. You may only have 4 or 5 marbles left in your jar. You might have 2,500 marbles left in your jar. I don't know. God knows. I like to close with this. As we think about life, some pretty serious, heady topics come to mind, and we always feel like we have to solve the problem. And the biggest problem is that we're not convinced about what we believe. It's not coming from inside of us. I love food. I just love food. You talk to me. At some point in time, the subject of food is going to come up. It's just guaranteed because it's who I am. And you know what? I don't care how many PhDs you have. I don't care how smart you are. I don't care how many countries you've been to. Nothing you could tell me could convince me that I don't love food. Nothing. Like, just nothing you could say. You cannot tell me that I don't love food because it comes from inside of me. Well, I love God too. And I'll tell you what I'm guilty of. I question. People say stuff like, "Oh, I better think about that." But it's inside of me. I don't know why I question it. Because it's who I am. And you know, if I'm being true to who I am, I guess every time you talk to me, something about God should come out too. Because if it's coming from inside of me, I don't have to make a resolution. I don't. Maybe the thing that we need to be doing is not worrying about making commitments and resolutions. And they're good. Okay, they're good. I mean, please read your 3 chapters a day. But maybe instead you need to figure out somehow that you can really have a relationship with God. Maybe when you first are cognizant that you're awake in the morning, instead of going, "Oh no, it's time to get up," maybe you should be like, "Good morning, God. I love you. Thank you for letting me wake up. Thank you for my wife, for my husband. Thank you for my family. Thank you for my life. Thank you for making me who I am. Not perfect. I got all kinds of problems. physical, spiritual, otherwise, doesn't matter. I got all kind of problems, but you know what? God made me just who I am. Maybe I should wake up in the morning and go, I love you, God. Don't even let my feet touch the floor before I'm like, woo, it's another day. I have no idea what it's going to be like, but I'm going to like it whether I like it or not. I say that all the time. Every single day. So I could be having a day that's rough. I'm not going to lie to you. You ask me how I'm doing, the worst you're ever going to get from me is doing good. If you hear good, I'm on the lower end of my scale because I'm going to have a good day whether I like it or not, period. And when I find myself getting grumpy and aggravated and tired, I say, whoa, hold on. It is a good day. It is a good day because this is the day the Lord has made. And I'm commanded to rejoice and be glad in this day, even though I really don't feel like it. It's not on my resolution 2.0 checklist to do that, but that's what God told me to do. I have a relationship with God. And what I'm going to do this year is I'm going to try to be more me. I'm not going to try to be my resolutions. I'm not going to try to be a checklist. I'm just going to try to be who I am. And you know what I'm really going to try to do? I'm going to really just try to say hello to God. And when I ask God a question, I'm not going to answer it for him this year. I'm going to try to say, hey, Lord, don't know what to do. Any help would be greatly appreciated. And I'm going to go on about my life, and I'm going to expect that God is going to help me, whatever that means to him. And you know what? Sometimes his help is us suffering and going through a trial and us having a rough day. Because you were the dummy that got yourself in, and God wants to make sure you learn your lesson, or he knows you're going to get in much worse, and he wants to make sure that when you do, you've been properly trained to get out of the situation. That's what I'm going to do this year. I'm going to be more me. And when I say more me, I hope and pray that because I'm a Christian, I'm going to be more like Christ, because that's my goal, right? And I'm just going to try to have a relationship. I'm just going to try to connect with God in a way I've never done before, which is just normally, not religiously, not resolution 2.0. Just, hey, God, I know you know how many hairs I had, and that was yesterday. I'm kind of wondering how many I have today, but you don't have to tell me because I know it's less. But I'm here, and thank you for waking me up this morning so I can kiss my kids. That's what I'm going to try to do this year. If I can encourage you guys to do anything, it's this. Wake up in the morning and just have a relationship with God. Read your Bible. I mean, come on. It's not that hard. I don't read my Bible every single day. Do not think I'm some pious windbag standing up here telling you that I read my Bible every single day. There are days I don't read my Bible, straight up. There are days I don't do my devotions, straight up. There are days I'm embarrassed that I call myself a Christian at the end of the day. Because I do stuff that... glad, you know, God's not physically standing there because he probably would have struck me dead for doing stupid stuff. I'm sure at some point in my career, I should have had many millstones hung around my neck for stupid stuff that I have said that's caused other people to stumble. But somehow, God found it in his infinite mercy to let me make it this far. And you know what I'm not going to do? I'm not going to live on my mistakes of the past. What I am going to do is I'm going to live right now. Future, not too worried about it. He holds the future, right? Take no concern for tomorrow. For tomorrow can take care of its own trouble. I don't worry about today. Okay, not the past, not that. Okay, I only got one day. And I'm going to realize that he's a lamp unto my feet, which is today, and a light unto my path, which is right here in front of me. I don't know what the end is. I don't know when the end is. I don't know where the end is. But what I do know is right here, right now, today, I don't have to worry about New Year's resolutions. I don't have to worry about God obligations. All I need to do is just try to treat God like he wants to be treated. Try to treat God like a relationship and talk to him and ask him questions without answering them and tell him what you're really bothered by. And tell him what you're really worried about. And just maybe by the end of this year, I'll feel a little bit better about who I am as a Christian. And I'll understand a little bit more about who I need to become as a Christian, as a man, as a husband, as a mentor, as an employee. And then at that point in time, if it's over, it's over. If I run out of marbles, I run out of marbles. But until then, I can guarantee you, not every Saturday, every single day, I'm going to wake up every morning and say, good morning, God, I love you. Thank you for today, whatever it's going to hold. And thank you for yesterday, whatever it held. And I hope I can honor you with how I talk and how I act and what I do and what I say and the people that I meet today. Because I didn't do a perfect job yesterday. So let's close with prayer. Father, we are honored and privileged, Lord, just to be your children. I have no idea how I managed to be accepted into your kingdom. Lord, I just don't deserve it. There's nothing about me that's good. There's nothing about me that's deserving. I'm not holy. Not even Job. Job was blameless. I'm not even blameless, Lord. And yet somehow or another, you've been able to look past all my shortcomings and all my failures, Lord, and just give me another chance. Father, I want to take today to be the first day of the rest of what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. I just ask that you would give me the strength. Give me peace. Lord, help me to do the things that I can't do in myself, and help me to remember the things that I should remember. And Father, I pray this for every person in this room. And Lord, if there's somebody here that's not saved, they don't know you, just pray right now that you would just give them a burning desire to know you. Lord, not religion, not check boxes, not God obligations. Lord, to know you, to just say good morning, I love you, thank you for today. Father, I pray that you would place this passion in each of our hearts. Lord, I pray that that passion would spread and that it wouldn't just change us, but it'd change our families and change the people around us. Lord, I pray that you would encourage us when we don't accomplish that, and that you would strengthen us so that we can. We love you, Lord. We thank you. We praise you. We honor you. I pray for safety for everybody as we leave here today. In Jesus' name, amen.